Good evening and welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the midweek edition of The Yard, much later than I anticipated today. That gets away from you, man. It's like I had some things I wanted to do today. I wanted to talk to Charlie Foster. You know, Charlie Foster, of course, was a very highly recruited left-handed pitcher that is headed to Mississippi State. There was some concern about the draft with him. He actually committed to Mississippi State while he was at the Major League Baseball Combine. Didn't get drafted. I wanted him to kind of take us through that process. You know, what's it like to be at home, kind of anticipating the call and fielding calls from your agent and things like that. You can read that story over at jeanspage.com if you're a subscriber. And then I wanted to get with Chris Lemonis to get his comments about the draft. Yeah, that's also available only to jeanspage subscribers. The Mississippi State affiliate of 247 Sports. The draft is behind us. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Mississippi State's day at SEC Media. There in Dallas, Texas, of course, our Justin Frommer and Dave Murray covering for us out there. And, yeah, busy week for sure. And then it's like, okay, we got a little portal stuff left to talk about in baseball. Not much, but a little bit left. Get through that. Have a pretty good idea what we're looking at. Of course, it's a couple of players that got drafted we were hoping wouldn't get drafted. And so we're kind of waiting out those decisions. I'm going to take you through that, what I've learned about that, what I know about that, what I think about that. And then we'll kind of get ready to shift, man, because there's not much left. Okay, by the time we get to August 1st, we're going to know what our roster is for baseball. You say, but Steve, it's 2 weeks. Well, it is. You know, and so unless a guy comes out and says, hey, I'm not going to sign or I am going to sign, then we're not going to know until August the 1st. Noon August 1st is the last day that teams have to come to terms with their draft picks. Of course, big news, Hunter Hines did not get drafted. I had a chance to speak to Hunter. He's excited to come back and have an opportunity to chase the home run record. I think his attitude's really good, too. He's just kind of like, hey, it didn't go the way we wanted it to. Didn't go the way it was supposed to, but here we are, and we'll make the most of it. Kind of a good situation for him. He's come back to a place where he is absolutely beloved and can play another year of college baseball. And then we'll see what happens next year. But, yeah, I got some things I want to say about that when we get deeper into the show. Not just specifically about Hunter Hines, but, you know, it's so difficult sometimes to know what to root for. You know what I mean? I mean, it really is. You know, what's best? I mean, selfishly, we want everybody back. But that's not necessarily best for them. And it may not be what's best for the program. I mean, you want to put guys in the draft, in the show. Mississippi State leads the nation with 11 Major League Baseball picks. So a lot of people come out and are really proud of that. Say, hey, that's great. And there's other people that come out and say, well, we should have won more. You know, we should have. Yeah, we should have won more, right? But can we not celebrate something without a caveat? I mean, really. Can we not just get to a point and say, you know what, hey, great for the kids, man. This is great for the program. I mean, everybody's talking about this. And for recruits, they look at it and it's like, hey, I can go to Mississippi State. Those guys can get me to the show. Those guys can get me to the pros. And it's so interesting, too. Like everybody says, well, you know, we're getting beat here, getting beat here, getting beat here. We get beat here. You know, we win this. You know, we had more draft picks than the national champions. Yeah, maybe you were unaware. But, yeah, there are some people out there that are absolutely committed to being miserable. And no matter what happens, no matter what shows up, there's always somebody jumps in your Twitter mentions or makes a comment on Facebook. Well, yeah, but this. Yeah, but. Yeah, but. Yeah, but. Man, what a tough way to go through life. I just try to celebrate whatever happens today, right? If something good happens today, I'm going to celebrate that. I get up and put my feet on the floor every single morning. Every morning, the first thing I think about, number one, I'm grateful to be alive. I'm grateful that I get to go to bed and wake up every single morning with my lovely wife. I'm grateful that my kids are doing well. I'm grateful that I'm sober. But when I get through all of that, right, the things that matter most, I think to myself how grateful I am that I get to write something, produce something, record something about Mississippi State. I think that is an absolute win. I am so grateful for my life and the opportunity that I have. You never know what's going to happen in life. You don't always get to live your dreams, and I've had a bunch of them. This is one of them. It's one of the biggest dreams I've ever had. I got to live my dream to cover Mississippi State. The head baseball coach at Mississippi State gave me an exclusive interview today to talk about the draft and share his thoughts on the draft and roster construction. Sometimes I got to pinch myself, right? You see, you know, with Steve with Chris, it's not even that. It's the position, right? A guy that grows up a fan of Mississippi State. A guy that spent his lifetime dreaming of Duty Noble Field and Davis Wade Stadium and Humphrey Coliseum, right? And I get a chance to talk to these people and ask the questions for you and type that up and make a living doing that. Are you kidding me? I'm the luckiest guy in the world, man. I am the absolute luckiest guy in the world. Once I get through that, I think to myself, okay, Steve, what do we need to do to win today? What do we need to do to win today? What do we need to do work-wise? What do we need to do for Gene's Page? What do we need to do for the Boneyard? What do we need to do for the True Rest Float Spa? What do we need to do for any book business? What do we need to do today? And every day is an absolute privilege and gift from God. And that's the way that I see it. I never dread doing any of this stuff. Sometimes things get away from me. And it kind of feels a little heavy on the satchel a little bit. It's like, man, I got a lot to do today. But I wake up every single day. I think to myself, I am so incredibly fortunate to be in the position that I am in, and I'm not going to dog it, right? I'm not just going to show up and say, well, you know, so-and-so's not doing this, and so-and-so's not doing that, so maybe we don't need to do that. No, we're going to go over and beyond every single day. I demand it of myself and the people that work with me. This is what we're going to do, okay? We're not going to wake up and say, okay, well, not much going on today. I think I'll take the day off. You know, they just, yeah, listen, the guys that work for me get to take some time off. Don't get me wrong. But I rarely ever take any time off. And it's because of the fact, I don't know how long all this is going to last. And I don't want to look back one day and say, you know what? I could have made somebody's day special. I could have written that feature. I could have written that story. I could have found some historical nugget to write about. And again, I'm just so incredibly blessed to be your eyes and ears. I take that responsibility and that privilege very, very seriously. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. I've had Bulldog Burger Company recently and plan to have it again very soon. I love it, man. I never get tired of it, right? It's one of those things like I know I have to eat each day. It is a requirement for survival, right? Now, some people eat just for survival. I've been around some people, and it's like, well, I'm counting his calories, and I got to eat these grapes and these walnuts. And you know what? I love grapes and walnuts, too. But I eat for enjoyment. I want to eat something that gives me nourishment, but also gives me a sense of pleasure. And that's exactly what I get with Bulldog Burger Company. And yes, I get the spring rolls as my appetizer. That's how I've been able to maintain this youthful exuberance and appearance all these years. That's the beauty care regimen. That and getting good night rest, right? But yeah, next time you're in town, go by and get the spring rolls to make you and everybody around you better looking. Get that great restaurant quality hamburger, whether it be the Bulldog, the Mission, the Lauren. Try something different next time you go. You'll be glad you did. And listen, I get it. Sometimes you're like, you know what? I know exactly what I want. I go there for this. I get it. I understand it. And maybe that's the way to go. But let me kind of roll you on the smokehouse a little bit. If you've never had the smokehouse, I think you owe it to yourself to try the smokehouse. Let's have a run on the smokehouse next time we're in town. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Be sure and go check them out. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, we talk about winning today. Had to get up to... had to get up and work on this portal thing. You know, it's like, hey, we've been in draft mode for a while. Now I got to figure out, hey, what's going on now with the portal? I got to get caught up to speed. So there was some adjustments to that. There's some guys that were committed to SEC schools that got drafted. You know, so what happens now? Like Michael Ross, one of the best pitchers in the transfer portal, committed to Florida. He had a 13-0 record. Mississippi State recruited him. He came in and visited. He chose Florida. Well, he's drafted. Now, what's he going to do, you know? So we got to figure those things out. And the issue now is there's not a lot of suitable replacements in the portal for guys that sign. Now, everybody oversigns a little bit. There's some reality to that, too. Everybody oversigns a little bit. Everybody's trying to win, including Mississippi State, Chris Simonis. So you go out there and you take the best people you can get, you know? That's just kind of how life works. But let's work through our draft tracker. We tweeted that out regularly throughout the draft. For those of you that were at work For those of you that perhaps weren't able to keep up with the draft as maybe as closely as you wanted to, a lot of views on that, a lot of comments on that. And so let's break down the draft in its totality, how it relates to Mississippi State. You guys are already well aware of the fact that D'Angelo Sanji went in the first round with the 15th pick overall of the Seattle Mariners. Pretty cool. Cal Steven went to Toronto in the second round. Both of those guys are going to get some pretty big coin. Now, since we have been together, there have been 9 other Mississippi State Bulldogs drafted. It's true. Also had another signee. Dante Norrie, of course, went in the first round in Philadelphia. We did have one more. We'll get that a little bit later. But let's go. Third round. Our buddy, Nate Dome, transferred from Ball State, spent 2 years here at Mississippi State, goes in the third round. I'm told, too, there was some chatter late in the second round that Nate may go then. And I have been a Nate Dome fan since he got here. I think he validated my belief in him. And you got to think, man, where could he have been drafted if he'd been able to stay healthy? And where would Mississippi State season have gone if Nate Dome is able to stay healthy? You know how dominant Cal Steven was? You know how dominant D'Angelo Sanji was? What if Nate's still on Friday, right? We may be celebrating something special today, right? We may have had another trip to Omaha. And I hate to lay that at Nate Dome's feet. I'm not trying to suggest that. I mean, Nate can't control being healthy or not. But, third round selection. So the first 3 Bulldogs taken are your original weekend starters. Pretty significant. Outfielder Dakota Jordan goes in the 4th round. Now, when we got through the 2nd round, we started hoping a little bit. You know, the Dakota Jordan told me himself several weeks ago, if I don't get what I wanted in the draft, I'm going to come out. I'm going to come back. Obviously, a draft-eligible sophomore, so he has 2 years of leverage to work with. Now, what's interesting, the Giants are about the only team that could have made this work in the 4th round. We thought when he got through the 2nd round, we thought, well, surely everybody will reconvene and he'll probably go in the first, I don't know, 5-10 picks or 3rd round. Somebody said, oh, Dakota Jordan's still available? Let's figure it out. Didn't happen. So we get through the 3rd and we start thinking, well, maybe this is not going to happen. Maybe he's wanting too much of a signing bonus, you know, for teams to satisfy that demand. And so you get to the 4th round and the San Francisco Giants take him. Now, what makes this a very unique situation is they drafted a senior, James Tibbs, from Florida State in round 1. It's pretty rare to see a senior go that early, but the guy's really, really talented. But because he is a senior, he will get paid under slot. Now, we talked about that before. There is a bonus slot. It basically gives them a budget. Now, they can go up and down on that if they need to, long as they don't exceed the bonus pool. And, of course, they can still go over the bonus pool and pay a luxury tax. So there's always some ebb and flow with this. But Frisco didn't have a 2nd-round pick, didn't have a 3rd-round pick. And so as a result, there's a lot of money still available. So they get to the 4th round, you take Dakota Jordan. A little bit later, you take a handful of seniors, and, of course, seniors have no bargaining power, so you can pay them under slot. And so you kind of create a scenario where you can pay Dakota Jordan close to first-round money, or certainly upper second-round money. Not exactly sure what he agreed to or what he signed for, but it was kind of a perfect storm, and they're probably one of only 2 teams that could have made that happen that late in the draft. But that's what happens. And we listen, you can't lose in this scenario because you went into the draft expecting to lose Dakota Jordan. You went into this thinking, you know what, DJ will not be here next year. Well, he's not. He's drafted later than we expected, but probably going to pay pretty close to what we expected. And congratulations to him. Our buddy Brooks Auger. And what a great story Brooks Auger has been for Mississippi State. You know, back in 2022, man, we really struggled. We had some injuries. Brooks stepped up and became our primary long reliever. And then Brooks gets injured. Misses all of 23. Comes back in 24. Does some spark starting for us. Did some closing for us. Gave us a night that we'll never forget in the Hoover Met. Is he had one of the most dominant performances that a Mississippi State pitcher has ever had when he had more strikeouts than balls thrown against the Ole Miss Rebels in the first round game of the SEC tournament for your Bulldogs. made himself some money that night. And Brooks is a great young man, too. And you got to think, too, I mean, he's, you know, he's fully recovered, but still probably not exactly where he wants to be. He'll only get better from here, provided he stays healthy. Sixth-round pick, 190th overall to the L.A. Dodgers. Colby Holcomb. Now, when I did my draft preview, I had a couple people that came out and said, well, Colby's not getting drafted, Steve. You're crazy. You're crazy. Well, I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. And it wasn't just me whistling Dixie here. Obviously, I talked to some major league scouts. I talked to people who were involved in this process. There were a lot of people that felt like, you know what? Colby Holcomb is a guy that we nearly drafted out of junior college. And he went to Mississippi State. And for one reason or another, it never really came together at State. But he has a pro body. He has the big arm. He has the velo that we want. And we believe that maybe he can find it in the minors. Colby Holcomb may be the next Brandon Woodruff, Eric Sarantola type guy. Could be. Could be in their walling. Could be a guy that just simply finds it in the minors. And I had some people close to Colby tell me this year that the draft was really, really, really on his mind. You know, he understood it was a draft year, really worked hard. And he kind of lost his footing a little bit late in preseason. He was dominant through fall ball in the early part of spring. And then his last outing of the spring before the season started, he just simply couldn't throw strikes. And then there were times, of course, he gets out there and he throws strikes. The next inning, he gets up a home run. There's a lot of inconsistency with him. But I can tell you, I'm very proud of this young man here. Of course, he goes in the portal to kind of create some leverage for himself. Ends up going in the ninth round. Great scenario for him, great situation. He'll get to make some money and probably get paid a little bit below slot, but very happy for Colby. And I think some of our fans, you know, and granted, I know that your allegiance is to Mississippi State, an institution and a sports program, more than it is an individual, but Colby is one of ours and probably did not deserve some of the criticism that he got. Nobody feels worse about giving up a gopher ball than the guy that threw it. But ninth round pick to Toronto. He and Cal Steven will have a chance to go together. Probably a good thing for Colby. Have a buddy. Kind of go through this process together. Maybe they'll be assigned together. 277th pick overall. Tyson Harden. I don't know that I have ever seen maybe a rags-to-riches story quite like this one. Maybe the closest thing to it that I recall is Chad Jurado. You remember Chad? Chad was a mop-up guy for us. If we'd had a transfer portal in 2012, Jurado would have been in it. He comes back in 13. Butch changes the delivery a little bit. Next thing you know, he's a big leaguer, man. Gets drafted, you know. And then now you see Tyson Harden. Many of you were rooting for him to get in the portal last year. And I couldn't argue against that. You know, he didn't have tremendous numbers in junior college. He comes here, was not good last year. Justin Parker gets a hold of him. They kind of refine the sinker a little bit, change your grip a little bit, a pitch that Parker said he's had a lot of success with. Harden gets out there, becomes a little more athletic, picks up some velo on the fastball. Next thing you know, he's drafted the 12th round by the Milwaukee Brewers. 365th pick overall. Happy for Tyson and his family. Grateful for his contributions to Mississippi State baseball. Connor Hyzak went a little bit lower than I expected. I thought Connor had a chance to go in the top 10 rounds as a senior saver. I thought that may be the opportunity for him. He ends up going to Tampa Bay in the 13th round. And maybe he makes that club. I mean, he's a guy, too. Age kind of works against him just a little bit. You know, they like guys to be kind of 22. You know, you get to be 23, it's a different dynamic. It really is. Because, you know, at 23, you probably should already be in Double-A baseball. But Hyzak, 13th round, 396th overall. You know, he will sign for next to nothing because he is a senior with no leverage. But he'll get a little money and get a chance to start his pro career. Now, his teammate and friend Tyler Davis was the next. You ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not. And that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe, and they even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, aura.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com. Bulldog selected by the Kansas City Royals in the 15th round. And again, much like Tyson Harden, a Justin Parker success story. Davis was a guy, I remember like about halfway through 2023, I remember telling Mike Nemeth, we just can't trust him. We just can't trust him. He comes back, Justin Parker finds some currency with him. He is born again hard and became the guy that we wanted on the mound. And, of course, when we bring him in the ballgame against Virginia with the season on the line, we felt good about it. Didn't work out for us, but really only two bad outings for him all year. The Florida Friday night game after he'd had to throw extended innings on Tuesday against Samford, and then the Virginia game. Every other time, he was absolutely lights out for us. Another senior, won't command a big signing bonus, but very happy for him to have the opportunity to continue playing baseball. 18th round, we thought we were going to get out of this thing after Tyler Davis. We get into the 18th, we're thinking, okay, we're good. Let's just hope no signees get drafted. We have to sweat this thing out, even though we knew that if they're drafted that late, they're going to come to school. But Dave Marchand drafted in the 18th round. Now, a lot of people say, well, Dave's definitely going to sign. I can tell you, unless he has signed this evening, I can tell you the information that I have is no decision's been made. I know some other people reporting other than that. I can tell you, after talking to multiple sources, he may sign, but he has not decided to sign yet. Now, part of the issue with Dave, too, is he's drafted by the California Angels. Now, there is a bonus pool for them that is right at $13 million. They drafted 21 players. Their very first pick, Christian Moore from Tennessee, has a slot value of $6.5 million. He will likely sign somewhere close to slot. That's almost half of their bonus pool in one player, which gives you right at $6.5-7 million to work with to sign 20 guys. The next two guys, slot values of around $3 million combined. So you start working through this and you begin to realize California is not going to be able to offer Dave Marchand a lot of money, especially compared to what maybe he could get by coming back for another year. But that's a decision he and his family have to make. I love Dave Marchand, love the family, love everything he's brought to Mississippi State baseball. I would like to see him get drafted and make some money. If David gotten drafted in the fourth or fifth round, you're like, man, God bless David. Thank you, right? And it's not like we don't have a shortstop. We feel like, you know, Dylan Cup's a guy that can do some big things for us. You know, we like him, right? But, you know, Dave obviously is a little more proven guy at the plate and certainly on the base paths. You know, we kind of barely just know Dylan Cup because not long after he kind of found that he got hurt. And so I don't worry about us defensively. But, yeah, I'd hate to lose Dave Marchand. I really would. And I think Dave could benefit from coming back for another year, but he didn't ask me. It is his decision ultimately. But again, unless something has broken tonight, he hadn't signed yet. And again, I know some people have said that they expect him to sign, and he may sign. I'm not going to sit here and argue against that. But I can tell you at this point, that conversation is a little bit premature. Because here's how this works, right? When you've got this bonus pool to work with, well, unless you're going to sign a guy, like there's a $150,000 threshold for all players drafted 11 through 20, right? So you can pay up to $150,000. Don't have to pay the full $150,000. But you can pay up to $150,000 and it not impact your bonus pool. If you go over that, the overage, let's say for an example, if they want Dave Marchand and he wants $500,000, if they pay him that $500,000, then $350,000 comes out of the bonus pool. Well, at this point, they really don't know what's going to be available in the bonus pool. Understand? Because of the fact, you've got to get everybody else's deal done. Now, there's some other guys, obviously, that are willing to take less than $150,000. Or they're only willing to go up to $150,000. So that's an easy deal to make because it doesn't cost you anything other than $150,000. There's no penalty for it. So if Dave Marchand's willing to go sign for $150,000, that's a done deal. They're finished. I just don't think that he's willing to accept that small amount of money because he had other teams approach him on day two and day three. And I'm sure he and his family had a number in mind. And so, like, if you pass on that, it's like, hey, I don't know the number, but let's say it is $500,000. And they're not willing to give him $500,000. He goes, well, I need $500,000. Well, we can give you $400,000. No, I can't do it. So I can't see a guy on Monday saying I need, quote, $500,000, signing for $150,000. Just can't see it. But, again, he may sign because they may find the money. They may have somebody else they can't come to terms with. You know, and what's interesting, too, that their 11th round pick is announced that he is going to sign and he wants in excess of $2 million. And clearly they wanted him more than they wanted Dave Marchand. Well, how do I know? They drafted him in the 11th and David in the 18th. And so that guy's going to take priority. They're obviously going to give him more of his demands because he was higher on the draft board. So it's important to understand that. Cam Schulke, drafted in the 19th round by Cleveland, we do expect him to sign. We want to thank Cam and his family for their contributions to Mississippi State. His parents, as I crack open a Mountain Dew, his parents, outstanding people. Dad's a coach. I've really enjoyed having a chance to get to know them. Cam's one of my dudes, man. He's a rock guy. You see him out at Dave's Dark Horse sometimes. Just kind of a weird dude, man, and I like weird dudes. You know, I'm a weird dude myself. But Cam drafted by the Cleveland Indians, or the Cleveland Guardians, pardon me, I'm an old school guy, in the 19th round, we do expect him to sign. And again, he's a junior, so he doesn't have any leverage. Chances are, if he comes back next year, if he did get drafted, he's going to get paid less than he's going to get now. So he gets kind of a head start at life, gets some money in his pocket, and he can begin his pro career. And he's the guy, too, that has been – his stuff has really translated well against the wooden bat. So don't be surprised – if Cam gets up there and hangs around for a while because of that unique skill set, because of the fact that he can throw from three different arm slots. He is a little bit predictable against lefties because he can't really throw the side armor in on those guys. You know, just kind of part of how it works. But he went up to the Cape last year, led them in strikeouts. So some guys are just better suited for the wooden bat, and perhaps it's Cam Schulke. But Cam, we barely knew you. I'm only here for a year, but appreciate your contributions. Got some big moments with him. Portal commitment, Travis Smith, drafted in the 15th round. Now, again, anything above the $150,000 threshold counts towards the bonus pool. He was drafted by Milwaukee. That's not noted in my article for some reason. I missed it. But Travis is a guy, too, kind of a similar situation. Got to get everybody in front of him situated first because of the fact they're going to have to, they have to come up with this money. They're going to find some savings somewhere. Will he sign? I think there's probably a better chance of him signing than there is Dave Marchand. They both may sign. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you right now what I know they're going to do. I can tell you as of this morning, he hadn't had a deal presented to him yet. That's important to understand. A lot of times these teams will come out and say, hey, will you sign for $650,000? Well, yeah, we signed for $650,000. Okay, well, we draft them. Well, then all of a sudden, a pick ahead of us requires more money than we thought. So then we got to come back and say, hey, listen, we asked if you'd sign for $650, but we only have $400. Will you still sign? No. Okay, we'll go to school. There's no penalty for losing that pick 11 through 20. There is a penalty for losing a pick 1 through 10. It's a true story. So that, you know, that's what you were waiting on. What will Dave Marchand do? What will Travis Smith do? And again, they have to August 1st, noon Central Time on August 1st to come to terms. And again, the guys made us decide to come out between now and then and say they're signing or saying they're not. But that's the absolute latest that we would know is at noon on August 1st. Mentioned we had some more signees drafted. Conrad Kaysen, the second of the 2024 class. A guy was drafted in the eighth round, and we think, man, it's a lot of value. It's only 219. However, they found some money because of the fact that they were able to take some savers with him. And I'm told that his signing bonus will actually be north of $1 million. When you find a savings, you can use it. The Boston Red Sox are very creative with their money. And so Conrad is expected to sign. Now, Dane Burns was actually a 2023 signee. We've talked about him a couple times on the show. He's a guy that's had a big summer. Sat out last year, didn't enroll, to recover from Tommy John surgery. And he's coming out throwing 96-97 from left-hand side. Kansas City basically takes a flyer on him in the 17th round. He's kind of a draft and follow guy. I'm told to expect him to enroll at Mississippi State. And, you know, something crazy could happen. Maybe you have a guy that doesn't pass a physical and some money comes available and they go back to Dane Burns and say, hey, all of a sudden we got $1 million. You ready to come to school? Come to play ball. He may change his mind then. But, you know, control has been an issue. And, again, he's not even a full year kind of removed from recovery. But this is a young man that could help us. But we do expect him to be in school. Can't say for sure. But we do expect him to come to school, barring something totally unforeseen. And, again, you got basically 2 weeks to sweat this thing out. But Mississippi State, again, leads the nation with 11 players drafted. That's not counting the signees or the portal commitment. That's 11 Bulldogs off the roster. All of those were expected, with the exception of Cam Schulke. We figured Marchand would get drafted at some point. We were hopeful that he wouldn't sign, and he still may, and he still may not. We just don't know yet. But, yeah, I've seen some people out there. It's like, I know we got a lot of casual fans that don't really understand the nuances of the draft. And they're like, oh, my gosh, Steve, we're losing all these players. Well, yeah, we lose the juniors every year. We lose the seniors to graduation. We hope they get drafted. We lose the juniors to the draft, with rare exception. And one of those rare exceptions, of course, is Hunter Hines. And if I told you began this draft – that Hunter Hines and Dakota Jordan wouldn't get drafted on the first day of the draft and you had a chance to get one of them back, you would say, I wouldn't even care, Steve. Just give me one of them. I'm thrilled to have another big bat lineup. And so when you start thinking about how offensive this club can be next year, you get excited. And then you factor in that Justin Parker, in 1 year, 1 year of development of Mississippi State pitchers, sets a school record, putting 8 pitchers in the draft. 8. The previous record was 7 back in 19. 8 in the draft. Never happened in the history of Mississippi State baseball. And some of these guys, let's just kind of be caught for what it is. And I say this really as a compliment and a testament to these young men, their commitment to work and get better, and the supervision that Justin Parker used and the development that he had within his system to elevate their game. Because guys like Tyler Davis, Tyson Harden, they were on the scrap heap of college baseball. Now, they're prepared to sign professional contracts and continue playing beyond the college level. In many respects, they owe a great deal of that opportunity to Justin Parker, and they will tell you the same. They had to do the work, though. It can't just be Justin Parker coaching them. They have to be willing to accept coaching. And when I interviewed Coach Ramonis today, I thought it was very big of him. He came out and he talked about Gerangelo. And he goes, you know, Gerangelo's not here without Scott Foxhall. Of course, Scott Foxhall was a lead recruiter. The guy Gerangelo here convinced him that if he came to Mississippi State, that he had the potential to be a first rounder. And, of course, Fox wasn't around to see that happen this year. But Ramonis kind of throwing a bone to both of his pitching coaches, Foxhall for the recruiting piece, and Justin Parker for the development piece. And you begin to wonder, man, I wish the draft had gone a little bit earlier this year, right? Because then you could sell, when you walked into every in-home visit with a pitcher and his family and said, hey, we just had 8 pitchers. We just set a school record for pitchers drafted in a single class in just the first year of Justin Parker. And these are pitchers, by and large, that he inherited. It wasn't like he went out and found, okay, this guy fits exactly what I want. This is my guy that fits my system. Most of the guys are guys that were already here, already signed. And I mean, you look at this, really, of the 8 guys, the only guy that Justin Parker really had a hand in recruiting, Cal Steven, who was our plan B after Luke Holman, right? Think about that for a second. You know, the one guy in this draft class that Justin Parker recruited ended up being a second-round draft pick. And so there's a lot of reason to be optimistic, for sure. And so the draft is now behind us, and what's left is we got a couple spots left to fill in the portal. Of course, you got to wait these guys out. I mean, it could be any moment now. We just don't know. I mean, Dave Mershon or Travis Smith could have announced while I'm recording this show. They may announce tomorrow. They may wait to the deadline. I just simply do not know their timeline for a decision. But I know that they're somewhat reliant on the club itself. Because they're not willing to sign for $150,000. They're willing to sign for $150,000. It'd already be done. I just don't expect either one of them to sign for that. And again, at this point, the clubs don't even know how much money they're going to have to offer them as a bonus, because they don't know what the guys that are drafted in front of them are willing to accept. It's complicated and simple at the same time. I drafted you 18. You're not willing to take $150,000. Well, I got to get everybody in front of you pretty much settled. Just about everybody. I got to get them settled and know how much money it's going to take to get them signed, because they were clearly a higher priority because we drafted them before we drafted you. So I can't make any promises until I get those guys signed. And so that's kind of where we are with that. And I know it's frustrating, because you'd love to be able to know that Dave Mershon is definitely going to be back. I can't make you that promise right now. Just can't do it. Can't do it. And I hope he's back. I do, and I think there is reason to come back, but I also don't know what young Dave Mershon and his family are thinking. I just don't know at this point. But I know that they're working through this, and they are educated people. They are people that are very, very close as a family. They will make what they feel is the best decision for Dave Mershon, and that may not be what's best for Mississippi State baseball, and that's completely okay, because that's Chris Simonis' job. He has to worry about what's best for state baseball. The Mershon family has to think about what's best for David, and sometimes that can be mutually aligned with what's best for state baseball. But no matter what happens, I'm very appreciative of Dave Mershon, appreciative of his contributions to Bulldog baseball. Hope he has another year of those contributions. I hope next year we're sitting here talking about Dave Mershon, you know, getting drafted 5th or 6th round and having a chance to, put a few $100,000 in his pocket and get a head start at life and begin his pro career. I hope that's the case. But if it's not, I'm still very appreciative of Dave Mershon. And I know that you guys are as well. And we're going to be fine. I mean, we'd be a better ball club with Dave Mershon. I'm not going to sit here and suggest that we won't miss him. We certainly would. But we are a team that's also oversigned like everybody else in the SEC. You know, there is a roster limitation. It's not like football where you got 120 to work with and 85 scholarships. You know, it just didn't work that way. And so, there's going to be some difficult decisions that have to be made. I mean, not everybody that transferred into the portal last year made the team. You remember that? You know, it's true. Remember, 2 years ago, Bill Lee was the guy that we signed, that we committed out of Mercer, and he got drafted. And, of course, Nate Lamb was the guy, one of our first commitments in the portal last year, didn't make the team. You know, and so you got to understand there are a lot of things, a lot of decisions that your staff has to make between now and the time we take the baseball diamond again for real. All right, it's time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Blair's been doing this 23 years. A lot of people out there want your business, but you know what? You need to put your business in the hands of someone you can trust. Visit him at closewithblair.com. You'll be glad you did. Let me give you his phone number, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. That goes directly to Blair. Not a call center, not a receptionist. directly to Blair's phone. He's probably right now, if he's not on a call, closing a deal, or clearing a pen from underwriting, he's probably listening to the show or reading Gene's page. Probably. That or finding something on the Facebook reels to send me. But, yeah, this is a guy that's 23 years of experience in the industry. Can be your advocate with underwriting. The guy's a winner. You don't stay in an industry for 20-plus years by accident. So whether you're looking for a game day condo, which may be more affordable than you think, it may not be beyond the realm of possibility like you may suggest. Blair can structure a loan to make it work for you. Not going to give it away, but again, it may be more affordable than you think. Or maybe you're looking for your first home and you don't know how to even go about this process. You don't even know about it. You're like, you know what, Steve, I know that I need to buy a house. Get with Blair, let him get you pre-qualified, and then your real estate agent will know exactly which kind of houses to show you. You don't want to shop over your means. You don't want to be in that situation. You start dreaming, and then when you get in a house that you can afford, it feels like a disappointment. Let's make sure that we're shooting at our depth, okay? Blair can help hold your hand and walk you through this. 601-500-2344. My friend, your friend, close with Blair. .com. Okay, I told you guys we needed to do another covers list to kind of cleanse our palate after those terrible, terrible covers that we did here a couple shows ago. One of my favorite bands of all time, probably one of yours, it's Alice in Chains. So I began to think about that. There's a few bands out there that have been a really good rendition, and there's a lot of covers out there of Alice in Chains stuff on YouTube. It's not on iTunes or Spotify. A lot of bands paid homage to Alice in Chains over the years, and Lane Staley and his untimely death. It's a very, very, very sad story. We won't go over it again. You can look it up yourself. But yeah, Lane, one of the more talented guys, not just from the grunge era, because Alice in Chains really kind of transcends the genre. And yes, I know they did drop detuning. I get it. I know they're from Seattle, but you know what? When all these other bands were beginning to cut their teeth, Alice in Chains was already on the road. It was a major opening act. Man in a Box came out when I was in high school, okay? It's true. So don't sell me on this other stuff. So Alice in Chains, really kind of the godfathers of grunge. But again, there's so much more than that. And it's taken me a while, but I kind of like some of the new stuff, too. I don't like it nearly as well. Okay? So let's go over some of the best covers of Alice in Chains songs. Now, some of these are going to be a little different, okay? And there are some bands and some songs that I don't think you mess with. And there's a lot of them with Alice in Chains. You know, you want to embarrass yourself, go try and cover an Alice in Chains song where Lane Staley really uses the higher part of his register, and it's going to be a very humbling experience for you. All right, number 10, a band that I knew nothing about until today. When I got ready to put this list together, I was looking and looking and looking, trying to find a good cover of Them Bones, and I found one. Now, this is going to be a lot more rocking than even Alice in Chains was on Them Bones. Of course, it's tuned down. I was in a band that covered this song. It's probably one of those songs, too, that maybe you can pull off. But it's a band called Thou. T-H-O-U, Thou. As in Thou Shalt Not, right? Thou. This is one of these screaming bands. Let me prepare you ahead of time. So if you have delicate ears, it may not be for you. But Them Bones, a very unique cover. Speaking of unique, number 9, somebody else from Seattle. It's Ann Wilson from Heart. And she does a very, very, very different version of Rooster. Of course, Rooster was a song that Jerry Cantrell wrote for the Dirt album as a tribute to his dad. He later confessed that he was on acid when he wrote it and shared the story with his dad. His dad got kind of emotional with him, and he's really kind of a man's man, didn't really kind of get fired up about that sort of stuff. But if you watch the video, you can see Jerry's dad kind of talking about his time in the war. But Ann Wilson, vocalist, I mean, easily one of the best female vocalists of my lifetime. One of the best vocalists, regardless of gender. But certainly when you begin to think about that lady not just belting out those big notes, but having kind of the grit in her lower register, she has an incredible range. She's not just some operatic singer. Ann Wilson, one of the most amazing singers of my lifetime, without a doubt. So her cover of Rooster, a little bit different, not quite as edgy, but something that I think you'll have fun with. Now, number eight, shout out to a Mississippi band from down there on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. A lot of people have covered this song. A lot of people. There's a lot of live versions of it. There's some other people that did acoustic versions of it live, and I just, it didn't appeal to me the same way. I love this song. There's a great story behind it. It's really kind of sad. The title of the song is Nutshell, and it is one of the most powerful songs in the Alice in Chains catalog, and it was one of those things they just kind of put down when they were wrapping up the Dirt sessions. They just wanted to kind of get this on record, and then came back and re-recorded it for Jar of Flies, and it's called Nutshell because it's exactly how Layne Staley felt at the time. And there are a lot of people that feel that, right? If you listen to the lyrics in Nutshell, and at some point, many of you know Alice in Chains, and this is one of those songs that was never released as a single, but it's kind of become a cult classic among the fan base, because we at some point have all felt this way. You feel so alone in the world. And our boys from the Gulf Coast, Magnolia Bayou, I think did the best version of this. Some other people out there done great ones. I really like what they did with it. And any time that we can celebrate Mississippi's music on this show, we want to do that. Number seven, now this is a demo version, and it's kind of silly, but I think it shows some fraternity of sorts with Seattle. Pearl Jam did a demo version of It Ain't Like That from Alice in Chains. Of course, that's off the Facelift album, a song that really only the true fans know. But Eddie's kind of silly in the beginning. But Mike McCready, who was really a metal player at heart that happens to be in a grunge band, kind of laid this thing down. I think you're going to dig it. Again, it's not the full song. It's just kind of a demo thing they played around with. That's your number seven track, Pearl Jam, It Ain't Like That. Number six, and a lot of people think this is one of the best Alice in Chains covers. That's one of the reasons it made our list. It's a modern-day version of what I think is one of the best songs about recovery ever. And it's not just about recovery, even though Jerry was kind of dealing with some things at the time. Thankfully, Jerry is no longer a heroin addict. Thank God he wouldn't be alive. But a band called Opeth, Opeth, O-P-E-T-H, Opeth, covered Wood. And, of course, Wood is on the third album. It's also on the singles soundtrack, a great movie, of course. Big Citizen Kane fan here. Or Citizen Dick, excuse me. There you go. Citizen Dick fan. But, yeah, Wood, a great track. You know, If I Would, Could You, right? That's the closing line of it. But the video, and this is one thing Dane and I talked about back when this thing first came out. We already had the album, and of course, everything was on MTV in those days. You watch more MTV than you listen to music, right? I mean, it's true. Really, about the only time that you listened to music is when you were traveling, because we didn't have TV screens in our cars back then. We didn't have them on our phones. We didn't have cell phones back then. We were in the early stages of that. Certainly not smartphones, but you kind of had MTV going all the time, and so when your favorite song came over, you'd stop what you were doing, go over and watch it. But I remember her saying then, man, the thing that I love the most about this video is they're just jamming, right? There's not a lot of theatrical stuff with them. There's not all these camera tricks. They just kind of plug it in and play, and I think that video, in many respects, kind of typifies who Alice in Chains is and was. So Opus version of Wood. Number five, a band you probably wouldn't expect to cover an Alice in Chains song. Because a lot of people are like, hey, you know, the grunge movement killed the 80s stuff. And I think in many respects that's kind of falsely attributed to grunge. It was really more of a shift in corporate rock with MTV and others. But my buddies in LA Guns, they covered Check My Brain. Not a Layne Staley song, but an Alice in Chains song. Probably my favorite song of the post-Layne Staley era. And it was the second single when they began to make their way back when Black Gives Way to Blue. So LA Guns covers Check My Brain. It's interesting. Number four, a band that Dana did the top 10 list on for you guys. And I think I told you guys too. I got so sick and tired of her playing that Theory of a Dead Man album. I can't remember which one it was. It's back when we had the CD changer in the van, right? And she wore this thing out, and I did not like them. There are some things in them that I do like, but I don't know. I was upset with her one day. I was riding down the road in her car, and I threw her Theory of a Dead Man CD out the window. I did. I don't even know if she knows that. Maybe I should tell her that. She wouldn't want me to go buy her another one. Maybe I owe her the amends for that. But they did a pretty good version of Got Me Wrong. You know that one? Of course you do. Great, great track. Going back a ways. Number three, I would say that probably the consensus opinion among fans today is that the band In Flames' version of Down in a Hole is the best one since the original. And a lot of people have covered it. You can go out there and probably find a dozen covers of Down in a Hole. A lot of people have covered that song. A lot of people feel some kinship with it. But I think In Flames was just enough of their own flavor, but kept it true to the original. I think you'll dig it. In Flames, Down in a Hole at number three. Number two, it's Corey Taylor and Stone Sour. Stone Sour, of course, Corey's a side project from Slipknot. Of course, Corey also a guy in recovery, stays busy, done solo albums. He's done covers albums. He's constantly doing something. They did an incredible version, and Dave Navarro from Jane's Addiction played the guitar on this. And there's a performance video out there on YouTube you can see. But it's Stone Sour doing We Die Young off the Facelift album. Great, great track. And a lot of people, you know, think of Man in the Box and think of Facelift. I love Facelift. And I won't say I like it more than Dirt, but I like some elements of Facelift as much as Dirt. I know it almost sounds sacrilegious. It's kind of like saying Jake E. Lee, the Jake E. Lee era of Ozzy, was better than Randy Rhoads. That's not saying that Jake E. Lee was a better player than Randy. It's just certainly saying that, you know, the songs that Jake wrote, I think the quality of the band was better with Jake because the music was better. The songs were better. Randy, a better guitarist, but the era was better, right? So I think when you look at Facelift and Dirt, you can see the evolution of the band as it got into Dirt and got a little more confident. But if you go back and like listen to the real thing and all that stuff, there's some things, some deeper cuts on Facelift. Like Bleed the Freak is one of my favorite Alice in Chains songs. I think it's one of the best vocal performances of Layne Stowe's career. But Corey Taylor, those guys do a great job with We Die Young of Stone Sour. But number one, maybe a bit of a surprise. We've talked about Man in the Box a good bit. From New Zealand, a band that I've met, had a chance to spend some time with. It's like a Storm's version of Man in the Box, and I think vocally they can pull it off. It doesn't sound exactly like Alice. They do kind of mix in their own kind of buttery goodness to this thing and put their own little nuance on it, but true to the original, but a little bit modernized in many respects. So there's a lot of people out there that have tried to cover Man in the Box, and they just don't have the chops to do it. A lot of people do it live because you've got the crowd noise and the distortion and everything else to kind of cover up the imperfections in your voice. When you listen to Man in Box and listen to those isolated vocals of Layne Staley, they'll give you chills because you begin to realize this guy's the real thing. I saw an interview a while back. I think it was the lead singer from Mudhoney, I think. But he said that he was in a rehearsal hall one day and, you know, Alice in Chains was demoing some tracks for Dirt. And he said he was just sitting near Layne Staley, and he said you could feel his voice resonating out of his chest. Like he sang with his whole being. And I think you have to be able to do that when you sing Man in the Box. So there you go. That's your top 10 list for today. A little surprise for you. You probably weren't expecting to hear some Alice in Chains. I love Alice in Chains. And if you don't already, let me tell you this. There is a guy named Anthony Vincent, you know, those 10-second songs. I've discussed him on the show before. They recently did a version, and you can find it on Instagram and TikTok and all the other socials. Anthony Vincent and his friend did Metallica's Creeping Death in the style of Alice in Chains. And it's like a minute long. It needs to be a full cover. It is absolutely phenomenal. I love it. Absolutely love it. And that's kind of what got me in an Alice in Chains mood. So be sure and check that out. Next time that you're scrolling through the phone looking for something, Anthony Vincent. He was also in the movie The Dirt. I don't know if you knew that. He was only in there for like a few seconds. He was John Corabi. He played John Corabi in The Dirt. Of course, John Corabi, the replacement singer for Vince Neil. Yeah, it's true. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart. I wish I could just win a lottery and go in there and buy it all out, right? I would buy you all a gift. I would just go buy it all out and just like ship it out to you. Because I want you to have new Mississippi State merch. I want you to have something new to wear, something new to enjoy, something new to decorate your home with, your office with. Well, I can't win a lottery if I don't play, right? So you're going to have to take care of yourself. On behalf of me, buy yourself a gift and then give yourself a card and you sign my name to it. Because I do love you. I do. And it's the thought that matters most, right? And so I share that with you because a lot of people say, hey, Steve, where can I get the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise? It's Campus Bookmart. It's not an opinion. It's a fact. A lot of people make the claim, but they are pretenders to the throne. Be sure and check them out next time you're in town. You know what? If you can't make it to town and you're looking for Mississippi State merch, don't go to Amazon. Don't go to one of these online services. Don't go to eBay. Next thing you know, you'll be ordering some Mississippi State merchandise and it shows up in crimson, right? Crimson and gray or something. You know, you want authentic Mississippi State merchandise. You get it from campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. And you order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. And it's always great to support a Starkville business. You know you love it here. Support the local economy. Support Starkville businesses, right? And speaking of that, you know, the True Rest Float Spa, we own that. We do. Doing well. And summertime, you know, so it's a chance for you to kind of get in there and float, maybe if you haven't. A lot of people have hit me up. Some former state athletes are like, hey, when I come up football season, I got to come try that. May help my little aches and pains. You need to come get an in-float, too. We may be able to help you. You know, we always want to make trips to Starkville. And here's the thing, too. We also have gift cards, too. And so maybe you know somebody that maybe can't afford to go or hadn't thought about going and you think they'd benefit. You can buy a gift card and send it to them. Dana can send you an email. And you can forward that email to them. Say, hey, I thought about you. This may be good for you to relieve some anxiety or stress in your life or perhaps some aches and pains. So call 662-268-7601 or find us on Facebook at True Rest of Starkville, also on Instagram and TikTok. And you never know, I may just show up and do a dance on TikTok because I'm trying to go viral, kids. We're trying to get discovered. I mean, I think there has to be a market for an old 90s dance guy, even in his 50s. I think I can still go. Especially maybe not by the standards that I did 30 years ago, but compared to many of you, yeah. And usually when I come out of retirement, it's usually like at my nieces and nephews' wedding receptions because they've never seen it, or now they've seen it and they all want to see it again. But yeah, we can make it happen. You know, you never know. I may just show up on a TikTok video and we'll just tweet it out. You know, I may just go out there and, I don't know, put on some old 90s dance clothes and, I don't know, dial up some Stevie B or some Kuiper. Maybe dig out the old Jam Is Cold single from my old band Cervello. You never know. You never know. I mean, I'm a riddle wrapped inside an enigma. And I'm still alive. I'm not sitting around waiting to die like some other people. I enjoy life. So you just never know. I may do a dance video to get you to come check us out at True Rest. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about SEC Media Day today. Full coverage over at jeanspage.com. All that coverage is free. Everything that was that happened today at SEC Media Day, we make all that stuff free. And there's some videos out there you can watch. Latest story was just posted about the NCAA video game coming out that we all enjoy as kids. It's now back. And it's funny, Levy told them they better enjoy playing it now. They're not going to be able to play it in season. But also got a video of Blake Shapen addressing the media. Also some Jeff Levy stuff. Be sure and check all that stuff out. But I want to run through some of the things that Lev said today that you may have missed. One of the things that I would say, and I guess Justin Frommer was the first that I saw to kind of mention this. I've seen some other people in the SEC media say the same. You know, Zach Arnett went up there last year, and he didn't look very confident and self-assured, which kind of surprised me. I mean, even though Zach's probably not the best public speaker, very confident guy. And a lot of people are like, you know what, he looks so unprepared. You know, the reviews today of Jeff Lebby have been very positive. And people are like, you know what, Lebby kind of commands the room, very stately, right? He is a coach, and he kind of gives off that head coach vibe. And maybe Arnett didn't. And again, you know, Zach, I'm very grateful to Zach. Zach stepped up in our time of need after, you know, an unspeakable tragedy. We needed him, and he did what he could to help us. It didn't work out. And I'm still grateful for Zach Arnett. I have no ill feelings in my heart for Zach Arnett, even though things did not go the way that I wanted them to go, and certainly not the way he wanted to go. I think there were some people in his ear that kind of explained to him that we needed to change the offense, and that proved to be his undoing. It did. Sometimes you just got to deal with the hand you got, you know. But they asked Jeff about, you know, we don't hardly have anybody back, right, on offense. I mean, think about it. You're like, Woody Marks, now at USC, you know. Will Rogers, now at Washington. Justin Robinson is gone. I don't even know where Justin is now. And so it's basically a brand new offense. These guys haven't played together. There's going to be some growing pains. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But Jeff Lebby was charged with coming in and flipping this roster. You got over 40 new players. We needed an influx of talent, and we needed talent that could come in here and fit his way of doing things. And so rather than, you know, him having to say, okay, I'll just build an offense around what I have. He's like, no, I got to go get some dudes that do things the way I want them done. I thought his answer was very intriguing. He goes, you know what? The climate of college football, where we're at, the portal cycle then in December was a huge part of us having a chance to have success in year one. I absolutely agree with that. Absolutely agree. In order for Jeff to hit the ground running, you had to be very aggressive in the portal, and we were. Back to Jeff's comments. We're talking about our starting quarterback, 3 of the 5 starting offensive linemen, 2 receivers, a starting running back, and on the defensive side, we have 3 starters in the portal as well. But being able to get off the ground was a huge part of it. That's not who we want to be, but we're going to create edge. We're going to be able to sustain as a program because we've got proximity to players. We're going to be a developmental program. We've got great junior colleges inside our state, which is an advantage for us. So those are things, as we move forward, it will look a little bit different. But for year one, we've got guys that will go out there week one that have played a lot of ball, just not a lot of ball at Davis Wade. Basically what he's saying here is we're not going to be so reliant on the portal, or we don't hope to be after year one. It was absolutely necessary in year one to come in here and flip this roster. And I think you all would agree. And those of you that saw the spring game, there's some names out there you don't know, some numbers you're not familiar with, but you saw some pieces offensively that were probably pretty exciting. I think we all feel that way. We'll get into fall camp. And I'm glad we get Eastern Kentucky in week one, you know, instead of Arizona State, even though Arizona State comes right behind it. You get that game to kind of fine-tune some things against pretty much a hapless opponent. You should be able to go out there and put up a ton of points. Probably get a little deeper down the depth chart a little bit. You know, but the reality of it is you don't need to waste a lot of reps early, but you've got to get these guys kind of meshed into one unit. And so, again, I think his comments are like, you know what, hey, we understand the resources that are available to us here in Mississippi with the junior college system. And listen, the JUCO system is not what it once was. And I know some junior college coaches don't like to hear me say that, but you don't have a ton of those D1 bounce backs. Used to, you'd have a guy flame out, didn't have the transfer portal, didn't have immediate eligibility. So if they didn't want to sit a year, they'd go to JUCO. And then if they were a full qualifier out of high school, they go to JUCO, they spend the summer and the fall there, they're right back with a Division I program come January. Well, you just don't have those opportunities the way you used to. There's still some, but not nearly as many, because people just go in the portal. They don't go to JUCO to reset the career now unless there's really an issue. And so the talent pool is not what it once was. That understood, there are some guys that go to junior college, number one, because they weren't an academic qualifier, but there are other guys in small town Mississippi that just need some seasoning. They just need to go get reps. They need to go play against a better brand of competition, and the Mississippi junior college system affords them that opportunity. We are so incredibly blessed, and I don't think a lot of people in Mississippi fully appreciate the fact there are so many other states out there that do not have a junior college system anywhere close to ours, and many of the JUCO systems around the country don't even play football. And so our Mississippi player, in many respects, kind of has a second chance at big-time football because of the JUCO system. And we should utilize it. We should recruit players every year. I used to say, you know, this is back pre-portal era. I said, we need to take a JUCO offensive lineman, a defensive lineman every single year. If not just for depth, but every year, just because of the fact there's going to be a guy capable of helping you. I think that's very, very important. All right, he talked a little bit about John Lewis. You know, the linebacker group is going to be a much, much different deal. Bookie's gone. Jet's gone. Those guys have been institutions here at Mississippi State. We got some young guys, and we got some guys who showed up from the portal. But John Lewis is a guy that people forget. You know, you beat Ole Miss basically at the very end for him. He was the guy that a lot of people early on thought he wasn't going to qualify. His film was incredible. My friend Craig Carter. Down there in Germantown. Craig does some radio and stuff for them. Craig's involved with the Germantown Mavericks. Craig hit me up, and I think at the time, Lewis might have had like Arkansas State, South Alabama, and he's like, Steve, this kid, everybody is sleeping on this kid. He's going to be incredible. And now here we are a few years later, and it's John Lewis going to SEC Media Days representing Mississippi State. How cool is that? Now, we're expecting big things from him. And we've moved him around a little bit too, but he's going to have to be a dude for us. And he was good in the spring from what we saw. And again, those of you guys that saw the spring game, you had a chance to kind of get a look at the defense a little bit. But John's a guy they expect to flash. Coaches kind of mention him a lot too. And then you've got Stone Blanton that comes in. So let's hear what Jeff – I'll read you what Jeff had to say. Calls him J. Lou. Yeah, J. Lou's done that, talking about him stepping up. That's why he's here today representing us. A guy that's going to play alongside with. And there's multiple guys inside that room that are going to give us a chance to create depth. But a guy, again, comes to us from an SEC school, Stone Blanton. He's always played at a really high level, has played inside this league, knows what it's supposed to look like. He's another guy, along with some others, that will help us fill that void. I don't know if we'll be as productive at linebacker without Bookie and Jet. But when you begin to think about the athleticism that is now available to you with Lewis and Stone Blanton, the possibilities are there for us to be very good linebacker. Of course, you hit the junior college system really hard. You bring in a couple guys there. There's going to be some competition there. But it's going to have to be done by committee because you don't have two bona fide proven stars. And if you think that group's just going to be better just because of the fact that you went out and allocated a bunch of scholarships to it, you're kind of kidding yourself. That's a lot of SEC snaps you're going to have to replace. But Stone Blanton, I've been a Stone Blanton fan, I guess, since he was about a sophomore in high school. And to be honest with you, I know he'd had some injuries, and I wondered if maybe baseball wouldn't have been his path to the pros. He and I obviously had different opinions. He's not playing baseball at all these days. And he goes to South Carolina, had a couple of good games, and now he's here. I'm glad that he's back. And I think that's a guy, too. When you are going out and recruiting and you're bringing guys in for official visits and you've got a Mississippi guy like Stone Blanton that has gone out and kind of tried it, I want to get out of Mississippi and kind of see something different, that's the guy that I want hosting the visit. Not just because of the fact that he's had that experience, but he's also incredibly intelligent and a guy that's grown up cheering for Mississippi State, and that's one of his things too. It was always in his heart. He had a great game against us last year, you know, a game that we should have won. Let's go ahead and throw that back out there. Even in Williams-Brice, we should have won that game. And maybe Stone was a big part of the reason we didn't. Now he's a Bulldog, and we're going to need him to really step up and kind of realize the potential that we all saw, with him. I think that's an important aspect of every bit of this. Is, you know, this defense, there are more question marks than anything else. And a lot of it was because you look offensively, and like Jeff Labby has a proven system. right? Everywhere he has gone, he has won. He has put up points. They have given the scoreboard operator plenty of opportunities to earn their job. Scored a ton of points at Central Florida, a ton at Ole Miss, a ton at Oklahoma. He's going to score a ton of points here too. Probably more in the years ahead, but I think this year we're going to be a fun offense, mainly because we got Blake Shapen, a guy that Jeff Lebby knows well. But when you begin to kind of work through this thing, defensively, you know, we just don't know a lot. A lot of question marks. You know, we don't know if the scheme is sound. We don't know if we've got the athletes to run the scheme at a high proficiency. We hope so. We don't know that. We know that our secondary has been an issue the last couple of years, even if things got better maybe towards the end of the year last year. But you kind of flip that group over. You get a lot of new faces out there. How's the play calling going to be handled? There's just, you know, that's the real question. I think everybody feels that way. It's like, you know what, I got a lot of confidence in Jeff Lebby. He's got a proven track record. Blake Shapen obviously is a guy, got a little Johnny football in him. I'm not saying he's as good as Johnny Manziel. I'm just saying that there is a skill set that is similar. He is a guy with some mobility that can extend plays and kind of keep defenses honest. And that's an element we hadn't really had in recent years. Haven't really had the demand for it. But, yeah, we've got a mobile quarterback, and it's obvious when you go out and get Michael Van Buren, and then you see even in 2026, you know, Michael Johnson, you know, we're going for the athletic quarterback with the big arm. And so, I get a lot of confidence on offense. You know, defense is kind of a wait-and-see thing. I think we all recognize that. Nobody out there is going to sit here and tell you we expect to have a dominant defense. If we can just be good on defense, we got a chance to have, you know, probably exceed expectations. But I think what's interesting, I spoke to another SEC media peer recently, and, you know, they're thinking we're going to win 3 or 4 games this year. You know, I think we're better than that. And a lot of it's because the toss-up games are at home and the more difficult games are on the road. I like a schedule like that, especially in year one, because it gives you a chance, number one, because I think you're going to be much more proficient offensively than people expect, but you get a chance to play in your own venue. Most of those games will be at night. You guys will be there to make the difference. Again, I think we're probably a 6 or 7 win team, but it's always interesting to see how other people view us. You know, looking at the questions here too, you know, we talk about the you know, scheduling and things like that, and kind of, you know, the playoff and those kind of things. And so Levy's asked about that. You know, it's like, hey, you know, what's it going to take, you know, for, you know, the SEC, and, you know, what does it do for the prestige of the conference by adding all these people? And, you know, anyway, I didn't think the question was great. I thought the answer was. Jeff says, well, I think there's nothing but good coming from the expanded playoff. You have the opportunity to not be perfect in a regular season and then get in and go chase and have a chance to win a championship. I think for a lot of college football, the excitement in the fan base, and for us specifically at Mississippi State, I think it opens a door and it creates a door. We'll always and forever make sure that we're talking about maximizing every day, every opportunity, every single season, and fighting like heck to be in that top 12. Now, we have had some years in the not-so-distant past that we would have qualified for the playoff. And so a lot of people think, well, you know, that's just a foregone conclusion that we're never going to be included. I think, you know, the chance of us making a 4-team playoff, you know, requires a legendary type year. When you begin to think about the 12 and the fact that we have a much different scheduling scenario now, the rotation is so much different nowadays. You know, you don't have to play Alabama every year. You don't have to play LSU every year. You don't have to play Auburn every year, even though we've had some success against Auburn. You kind of understand my point. I mean, Jeff Lebby, I think, is a guy that recognizes, you know, we're going to have some things go right for us. But I've never, ever heard Jeff Lebby have a defeatist-type attitude about that. Like, well, Mississippi State's going to have to get lucky. I'm going to tell you something about Dan Mullen that he told me one time that may not make you happy. You know, he made a comment one time. He said, it's just so hard at Mississippi State to win the West. And that's some truth in that. But rather than elevate Mississippi State, he said, well, you know, you kind of got to depend on Auburn, LSU, Alabama, and A&M all kind of having down years, and the chances that happen and just aren't a good thing. And that may not surprise you to hear that, but I think that's one of the reasons it led him to go to Florida. It's an easier path to Atlanta, in turn, an easier path to the playoff, which, of course, it blew up in his face. And let's just kind of, you know, shoot it for what it is. If Dan Mullen's back in 18, we probably win the West. Isn't that crazy to think about in hindsight? Now, granted, he did a great job at Florida the first 3 years he was there. And again, I'd love to know what really happened that led to the end of the thing. But the reality of it is that I don't get the sense that Jeff Lebby sees this as one of those things. It's like, well, we're just going to go shoot for the Liberty Bowl or the Music City Bowl. I think Jeff Lebby's a guy that sees it, hey, everywhere I've gone, I've won, and I've won big. I've put some great offenses on the field. I'll do the same thing at Mississippi State. I think that's an important aspect of it. We talked about tempo a little bit too. I can't remember who it was, but somebody else mentioned when he was at Oklahoma, he ran a play every 23 seconds, which was the eighth fastest time in all of college football. He expects to do the same thing here. Talking a little bit about communication, and we talked about on the show too about, you know, does the helmet sticker help us a little bit, that having the helmet with communication direct line to the coaches? I think it does. Probably can help you go a little bit faster when you need to. And you wonder too, how much tempo do you want to run in a tight ball game when you've got a defense that maybe is a little bit shaky, you know, maybe ball possession. And Jeff's a smart guy. He'll figure all that stuff out. We're not going to go out there and go fast for the sake of going fast and wear out our defense. But they asked him about that. He goes, yeah, I think a little bit of that is a balancing act. And still being able to have some ball control and some game control while creating great tempo and great opportunity through how we play. We'll never be any different than what we've been from the mindset of knowing that we get to dictate how the game is played because we have the football. That will forever be the case. So being the aggressor, being pedaled down, will be who we are. But being able to change the pace a little, I think, makes it a little easier being able to have communication. Absolutely agree with that. I also think, too, one of the things about when Lebby was at Ole Miss, and there was a little bit carryover with Lane Kiffin, too, last year, is striking first, right? You go out there, you have some, you know, some pregame scripted plays that you have recognized in film review, and you go down and you get up 7-0. So you give your defense an opportunity to play with a lead early. So even if you give up a score early, more times than not, it's a tie ball game instead of you trailing, right? And because then all of a sudden, there's a little more urgency on offense. That's one thing about the whole Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin, Jeff Lebby thing that I respect, is their ability to go fast to get a lead and then go fast at the end of halves and kind of steal some momentum going into the break. I mean, you go back and you think about the last Egg Bowl we won, right? You go back and think about that 22 season, right? We thought the game was over. And what do you know, Jackson Dart and those guys, you know, run some tempo late and end up tying the game for us in overtime. You know, that's a nice weapon to have in the quiver that we haven't had. We haven't possessed that. And so that's something that I think that Lebby will bring that will be something different. It's something that we haven't seen. We're going to go fast. And you got to be opportunistic with it. And again, Jeff Lebby's an incredibly intelligent guy. You know, he's not just going to go out there and be stubborn. He's going to know how to manage the game. So again, you can find all this content over at jeanspage.com. It's all free. You can watch videos. You can read the transcripts. You can read some feature articles. And again, you don't have to be a member to read those. You should be a member. If you want to read our baseball content today, you have to be a member. But I share that with you because, number one, I'm ready to transition to football. We've got some portal stuff we're going to talk about here. Still a little bit left to go. And then pretty soon we'll be pretty much locked into football season, right? And media days is always kind of the unofficial kickoff. I think we all kind of see it the same way. I'm ready to see this team on the field. I'm ready to see this team in practice. And there will be some open sessions for us. We'll have an opportunity. I'm told it's going to be not going to be wide open like it was with Leach, but it'll be more open than it was in the spring. And so I'm eager to be able to get out there and get some pictures and get some observations and kind of share with you guys who's looking good. And, of course, it's just practice. We've had some years in the past where we've had some guys that were practice heroes and it never translated to the field. So you got to take all that a little bit with a grain of salt. But I'm eager to see Jeff Lebby's offense run. And I'm eager to see it all kind of come together in fall camp. Guys, it's hard to believe. Guys, we're playing football next month. Next month, August 27th, if memory serves me correct. Last Saturday in August, we're going to be on the football field. So, you know, we're back 6 weeks away. Let that sink in for a second. Start getting your honeydew stuff done because we're going to need you at Davis Wade Stadium. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And when you do, their Facebook page will come up and you can peruse through the fine amenities that are available to you at that fine establishment. If you're bringing a large group to Starkville, there's no better place to stay in the Golden Triangle than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. It's nice having everybody under one roof, isn't it? You know, and the older I get, the older my kids get, the more I appreciate the opportunities we have to get everybody together. Get the grandkids together. You know, maybe you consider a late summer trip to town, you know, just to get everybody together. Maybe it's a baby shower weekend. Maybe it's a bachelor party weekend. Maybe it's just a family weekend, a cousin's weekend, a couple's weekend. I don't know your needs, but I know I can tell you where to find the finest accommodations. That's the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, when you Google, some booking options are going to come up. You're going to have, of course, Airbnb, VRBO. However, if you want to save a little money on your stay, I can help you with that. Book through the Evolve website using promo code BSR10, BSR10. Save 10% off your stay. Whether it's a ball game weekend, weekend retreat, maybe it's a work group you bring into town, they can accommodate you. Great big back porch area, full service kitchen, wet bar, 5 bedrooms, 2 bath, that fabulous back porch. Even got a fire pit outside. You can fire that bad boy up, sit right there, and have some conversations that matter. Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right, I promised you guys some portal updates. We'll have a couple of visitors in town. And really, the truth of the matter is, if you get Mershon and Travis Smith in, you probably just need one more bat, one more outfielder to provide a little competition, maybe some depth out there. It was one of the things we really struggled with this year, was offensive depth. So when you had a guy struggling a little bit, you really just couldn't afford to sit him, you know, because you didn't have somebody else that could step up and kind of eat up some at-bats for you and provide some production. We don't want to be in that position next year. And we don't want to just be reliant on, you know, first-year players or even second-year players. You want to be able to put some guys out there that can truly compete. And so I think you can feel certain that we're going to take another bat. And then maybe we take another arm. And probably some of that is predicated on what Travis Smith ultimately decides to do. Now, is there a pitcher of his caliber still in the portal? I would suggest to you probably not. Maybe you go get a young guy with some upside and say, you know what, we want this guy in our program. Let's take advantage of the transfer, and maybe he can eat up some innings for us. But I don't think there is a weekend starter in the portal. Maybe. You know, maybe there's some guys that expected to get drafted. You know, maybe I know Ole Miss picked up a guy from Tampa that won 13 games last year. Maybe you get a guy from a lower level like that that is a winner that maybe could be your Sunday starter. Just don't know. You know, and a lot of that you wonder, how will that translate to the SEC? Some of the finest trained hitters in the country. So you've got to find some guys that can get outs. Now, if Dave Mershon signs with the Angels, yeah, you may have to consider taking another infielder. Maybe. You know, I don't know that for sure. You know, you start working these pieces around and say, you know what, maybe we're good there. But if you can find value at the shortstop or the second base position, maybe you head in that direction. You know, but, McCarthy from Kentucky is a guy that's been mentioned prominently in connection with Mississippi State. I think that's a name to watch as we get going here in the next day or two. You know, and it's, again, you think about your coaches, right? You think about your coaches, right? So they've been entertaining portal visitors all throughout the summer, going out to the Cape, seeing our guys, recruiting, evaluating. They get back. You got to sit down and go through the draft. You got to recruit your guys to not sign your signees. You know, and of course, you're fielding phone calls from teams about draft eligible players. You try to give reports on that. So as soon as we get done with the draft, we're right back to hosting visitors, and then your coaches are on the road working on, you know, the 2025 and 2026 class. You may not know this, but come August 1st, we can start offering kids for 2026, and we already have a couple commitments for 2026. But those guys committed before the new rules came into play. And so you got about 3 more weeks, as Lamontis told me earlier today, and then your summer's kind of in the books. And so as soon as you get done with that, guess what? You got everybody else reporting to campus around August 9th. And so then you go right to work getting those guys in, start working on your 4-1 workouts and things of that nature, get them with Shipman, the strength and conditioning staff. You start working through fall ball, you know. It's really a year-round experience now for your coaches. And, you know, we talked about that in football, right? And as arduous as the football recruiting calendar is, baseball schedule even more so, because they've got to deal with that draft. You know, because it's not where you declare for the draft in baseball. You declare for the draft in football, you declare in basketball. But in baseball, once you're eligible, anybody who is eligible can be selected. Now, you can come out and say, hey, I'm not going to sign, and go tell everybody. But everybody wants to their market value. And so now that we're through the draft, and once we get the reporting date, you know everybody that's here, right? So you're not recruiting for the 2025 team once you get the class on campus August 9th, right? And so once we get that done, you take a little bit of a break, sort of, right? And I don't know when we start fall baseball. You know, I know last year we wanted to do it earlier and give the guys some time off toward the end of the semester and to kind of enjoy football season, but also to have the opportunity to, you know, finish up classes and spend time with their family during the holidays. There's some other people who like to do it later because the temperature is a little bit cooler. Not exactly sure what Lemonis is going to do this year when it comes to that. But we will have some baseball weekends kind of coupled up with football weekends. So you'll have an opportunity to come, go to the baseball scrimmage, and go to football. I like it when we do the baseball game Saturday and then have a game Saturday night. Or have a game Saturday night and then a scrimmage game on Sunday. I love when you get a chance to come spend the weekend in Starkville and then have the opportunity to see all that stuff up close and personal. And I think this year, fall baseball especially, because of the fact we've had such turnover on the roster, I think you're going to want to see this team. You're going to want to see them in person. And it's always great to be out at Duty Noble Field too, even if it's just kind of getting a sense of what the guys look like. But I appreciate you guys that come out and support baseball. But it's always so great when we can afford you the opportunity to do both. There's sometimes we have baseball scrimmages on game day. And then, you know, Lemonis has said before, he wants guys to be able to enjoy the college experience too. And then, you know, be able to take care of baseball and go to football and be a part of that. Be a student, you know. That's important too. All right, so just so you guys know too, on the Dude, we're pretty much done. Just kind of waiting now. They'll finalize typesetting and they'll go through all the proofs. My agent will sign off on all that stuff, and then the file will be shipped to the printer. It takes about 6 weeks. You know, of course, they go ahead and get us in the queue long ahead of time. We deliver by a certain date, and so again, we're expecting a September release date. I would love to have it before then. I just don't know if that's going to be feasible. But again, we don't know how busy they are. They may be able to get right to us. And maybe it doesn't take the full 6 weeks. But that's usually what we're expecting, about 6 weeks, and probably September. It's been an incredible experience. And I have reached the point now in my life that I'm ready for this book to be released. I'm ready for you guys to read it. I'm ready to answer questions about it. I'm ready for you guys to be able to buy it and give it away for Christmas. I'm ready for you guys to have it as part of your Mississippi State collection. And then as soon as I get done with the book, I start getting inundated with questions. Steve, what's next? I absolutely do not know what's next. This book wasn't on my radar this time last year. And it's one day, you know, of course, I just thought, you know, hey, what about writing a biography of Duty Noble? And of course, that all happened after Zach Arnett was fired. I've shared that kind of that line of thinking that I began to do my research about how many coaches we've had that didn't finish the season, led me to Major Raph Sassy, and saw a picture of Duty Noble with the football staff as he coached the freshman football team. And I'm like, why is this not more well-known? I said, somebody should have wrote a book about this. I said, well, maybe I will. So here we are. It is the most detailed book I've ever written. And you know, there's some people within my organization that believe that it is worthy of some awards, and so it'll be nominated for some things, and then we'll see how things go. But I didn't write it to win awards. I didn't write it for reviews. I wrote it for all of you. I wrote it for my own knowledge and for your knowledge and love of Mississippi State. If you haven't done so already, go to dutynoblebook.com, and you can pre-order the book, and you'll have it pretty soon. A lot of people are waiting patiently, of course. We're already sold out of limited editions, and I'm getting some calls from bookstores about how they can get the limited edition. That is impossible. That was only available through the website. And once those quantities were published, they were purchased, they were exhausted. So there will be no limited editions sold in bookstores. So if you have called bookstores or have impressed upon them when the limited edition comes out, you want a copy, you're not going to be able to get a copy. I'm just telling you, they're not going to be made available for purchase. The people that bought those have bought those, and that's all there is to it. That's behind us now. But you can get a signed copy. All copies ordered through the website, dutynoblebook.com, will be signed for whatever that's worth. And we'll get it out to you. And so it'll be here before you know it. I'm eager to do some game day signings. It's a very, very busy time for me. But I enjoy this aspect of it. So many of you have been so incredibly kind to me. While you're there at dutynoblebook.com, you can buy all of my sports books and When the Bottom Falls, which is my personal memoir. And very limited quantities of Stark Villains and Alpha Dogs. And we have been asked many, many times about, you know, do we do Audible? We don't yet. But I am thinking about doing some of that this next year. And also, too, we're in the process now because of the fact that Alpha Dogs and Stark Villains are in such limited printed quantities. I'd say less than 20 on Villains and probably less than 50 on Alpha Dogs. So if you want those, you need to act quickly because you don't want to be without those. And they're going to be out of print for a while. Maybe we come back and do a different edition. But once we get done with the Dude, we're going to do a fresh update on Alpha Dogs and Villains. And our plan is to make those available on Kindle and through the electronic mediums. We've never done that before, but we'll do a fresh edit. And I think I'm a much better researcher today than I was back then. So we'll probably add some bonus material for that version. And so we've heard you. It's just a matter of me finding time to do all this stuff. You know, in addition to having to write an 80,000 word book, I've had to cover Mississippi State, which takes up a lot of time. And that's a full-time job in and of itself. So I'm writing on the side. So I've enjoyed getting a lot of sleep here as of late because when I'm in the writing mode, I get very obsessive. And I'll stay up and get about 3 or 4 hours sleep sometimes and have to get up and do radio the next day. And so I share that with you just because I think it's important to know there will be some other mediums to get the books. But we'll do Villains and Alpha Dogs. And because of the fact they're companion books, I think it's important that they go out there as a set. There's still plenty of inventory of Dogpile, and every Bulldog needs Dogpile. And I would say there's probably maybe 400 or 500 copies of Flim Flam left. We have sold thousands and thousands of copies of that. If you don't have it, I'd encourage you to get it. If you've got a smart aleck Ole Miss brother-in-law, maybe buy that for him for Christmas or for a birthday or for an anniversary gift or whatever. Again, a few hundred copies of that available, and we got a ton of Dogpile left. That's a book that we have stocked extensively because of the demand for the book, but also, too, because of the historic nature of the book. We really just don't want to run out of it, and we don't have to do the printing, so we kind of got overprinted on purpose. So a little overstocked on Dogpile, so you can make a move there. But if you want Alpha Dogs or Villains, you need to act quickly. And I guess, I don't know, maybe 1,000 copies of When the Bottom Falls left, maybe. Sold a bunch of those too. Doesn't sell as well as the sports books, but I know many of you are kind of like the human interest side of things, and maybe you're a person that has struggled with addiction or have someone that you love and you want to understand more about it. When the Bottom Falls may be for you. But yeah, really excited about the Dude. Again, I think it's the best thing I've ever written. My wife says, you always say that. I said, well, I think it's because I improve as a writer every single book, but I will put my research in this book up against anybody in the country. Very, very proud of the work. And reading back through it and doing all these edits, which is a part of the process that I absolutely despise, this time wasn't quite so bad. I think a lot of it's because I delivered cleaner copy on the front end. You know, when we wrote Dogpile, it was one of those deals where we had to do it so quickly, I just kind of roughed it out and put it in the chain, right? So it comes back to me, it's really all marked up. Not nearly as much of that here. And, of course, with When the Bottom Falls, a different dynamic, not as much fact-checking, but I'm excited about this, and I think it's something that Mississippi State fans are going to enjoy for years to come. I think, in many respects, this is the legacy book. Many people know me from Flim Flam, but I think this book, in many respects, really is more what I would want to be known for, if that makes better sense to you. Let's get out of here again. Sorry for the late timing of the show. We'll be early on Friday. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.